Did anybody have any thoughts after they read that article that I sent out, the one that was published in the Arizona paper?
It was on Facebook.
Can you read that article? I have no idea what you're talking about.
I think if you look in your archive back a couple of days ago,
I can find it.
Yep, you'll see. I sent you a link to an article in a paper in Arizona.
I'll look for it.
Anybody else have comments about that article?
Well, my comment is I like seeing stories of people who are helping and people who are finding a way to serve others. And I think that that helps us with anxiety and fear. And what I really liked about that particular story is the mother teaching her children to extend themselves in terms of service. And I think that when we can stay active doing that kind of thing and looking for ways to help, it helps us with our own anxiety and fears because we're contributing to a solution, or at least in some small part contributing. I don't know if that was the point of the story, but that's what I got out of it.
Anybody else? Well, when I read that, I saw something entirely different. I think Kim has hit on something that's very important. And one of the things that we'll talk about in a later class. But what I saw that was so striking to me was the woman that they delivered the eggs to was telling them about all of the other things that she had been through at different points in her life. And, knowing that there have been other cases of pandemics and other cases of difficult times that people have faced, puts that into perspective for me when we talk about COVID-19. I think that there are things that are important to recognize about our perspective. Some things that we have seen really are happening for the first time. This virus that causes COVID-19 had never been observed in humans before late 2019. Maybe it was in the bat population, and bats carry a lot of viruses that don't make them sick, but they're there. And in fact, scientists who study viruses do a lot of study of bats. That's why I'm not a virologist, because I can't stand bats. And it may be a mutation of some virus that we've already known about that has suddenly mutated in such a way that it's affecting people as it has been affecting people. And for the first time, as far as I know, Christians around the world did not gather together on Easter Sunday. Most buildings around the world, here and in other places, were completely empty on Easter Sunday. And we've been around long enough to know that even people who don't go to church very regularly just about always go to church on Easter Sunday. So there are some things that are happening for the first time. There are some things that are happening for the first time in my life. I've never been told to shelter in place, stay at home. I didn't go through any of the times that may have happened. I've never seen restaurants closed, at least closing their doors to all customers. And the only way you can go to a restaurant now is, well, Ted was describing running down
to Panda Express.
Ted came by the building. He was working this afternoon. They had a slot basically through the door, and you order, and then you went to a different door, and they slid your order underneath of the slot in the door. I've never seen anything like that. I've never worn a mask and gloves when I go to a place of business. I've never put on latex gloves to use an ATM machine. I went to Market of Choice the other day, and they had a big piece of plexiglass that was in front of the customers and shielded the person that was checking you out so that there was very little interaction that way. I've never been in a position where I had to set aside and save my contribution at home so I could make it later for such an extended period of time. I mean, I've done that sometimes when I've been on vacation, but never, never like this. And some things are just happening at a level that I've never seen before. Unemployment is, well, I heard a report today that unemployment may be as bad as it was during the Great Depression, if not worse. I have never seen shortages of PPEs or personal protective equipment or medical devices. I've never seen a run on toilet paper.
Trump's going to get blamed for it all.
And because of all of those things, the things that are happening for the first time, truly happening for the first time, the things that are happening for the first time in my life, and the things that are happening at a level that I've never seen before, I think it's impossible to maintain a perspective. And when I say maintain a perspective, I think the most important thing is to realize that God has seen all of these things happen before. So I put together a list of the 10 deadliest pandemics in history. We'll just run through it very quickly. The Great Plague of Milan in Italy, 1629. 1 million people died. It was probably an outbreak of the bubonic plague. They think it was spread by French and German soldiers in the 30 Years' War. I found it very interesting that there were some towns in northern Italy, even though many places were completely devastated, there were some towns in northern Italy where there were no deaths. The town of Ferrara was one. They had strict border controls. They wouldn't let anybody come into their city. That's back when they had city states. They enacted some very strict sanitation laws. They built a hospital outside of the city walls. So there were no deaths in Ferrara, even though across northern Italy there was this huge death toll. Now, when all of that happened, they thought the cause was corrupted air. We know now it was a bacteria, but they thought it was corrupted air. They didn't have much knowledge back then. The Hong Kong flu in China, 1968. Yeah, I'm old enough to remember that. But when that happened, we didn't have the kind of instant communication that we have now. And I was quite a bit younger, and I wasn't concerned about the news as much, but somewhere between 1 and 4 million people died. It was a novel influenza A virus, H3N2, and it was very, very fast spreading, spread worldwide within 2 months of the time that it was first found. Cholera, 1817, right up to the present day. 95,000 people a year die from cholera. It's caused by a bacteria, and Vibrio cholerae, I probably mispronounced that, but it still persists in the world in places where there's poor sanitation and there's very little water treatment, because raw sewage seems to be the way that it's transmitted. The Antonine Plague in Rome in the year 165, well, 15 years, 165 to 180, 5 million people died. A lot of historians say that this Antonine Plague contributed to the fall of the Roman Empire. And it may, we because their knowledge of bacteria and viruses was so limited, we don't know exactly what it was. It might have been from the descriptions of what was going on, measles or smallpox, or maybe a combination of the two. There was an outbreak of the bubonic plague, that they call it the third plague, in Yunnan province in China, 1895 or 1885 through 1950. This lasted for a long, long time. 12 million people died. It's the most recent outbreak of bubonic plague. And it was this outbreak of the bubonic plague that helped us discover the way that the bubonic plague was transmitted. It's this Yersinia pestis bacteria. Think about HIV, sub-Saharan Africa, 1981 up to today. 25 to 35 million people have died. There are whole generations that have grown up as orphans because of the death toll associated with HIV. It was spread through blood, sexual transmission, and it could be transmitted from mother to child through birth or through breastfeeding. The Plague of Justinian in the Eastern Roman Empire, 541, death toll, 30 to 50 million people. In 541, it's reported that this plague was killing 10,000 people every day. And that's when they coined the phrase, the Black Death, to describe this. Because if you got this plague, typically one of the first symptoms that would arise was the tips of your fingers would turn black. And it was spread by Yersinia pestis, this flea that lives on rats that was biting people, and it was spreading this virus. 1918, the Spanish flu. I hear a little bit about this in the news. 40 to 50 million died. It's estimated that 500 million people, or one-third of the global population at that time, were infected with the Spanish flu. It's caused by the H1N1 virus. It's similar to swine flu, first seen in birds, easily transmitted from person to person, spread very, very rapidly. Think about smallpox that was introduced to America in the 1520s. Death toll was 50 million people. He spread because Columbus and the explorers were bringing animals and plants from Europe to the New World, and the natives in the New World were being exposed to these plants and animals, and they had never developed an immunity to the things that were present in those animals, even though they weren't making the Europeans sick. It was the specific virus that caused it is the variola virus. The last natural outbreak in the United States of smallpox was in 1949. That's just 3 years before I was born. Now, I never heard of smallpox. It was eradicated between 1960 and 1980, at least in America. Though I believe the last case occurred in the late 1970s. And think about the Black Death in Europe and Asia, 1350s. 200 million people died. At the start of the pandemic, 60% of the city-state of Florence's population died within just a very few months. And it was caused by Yersinia pestis, this bacteria that was carried by fleas that live on rats. And when we began to trade and we began to move ships back and forth, these rats would go on the ships and they were taking it all over the world. It's just incredible. And I think part of what really impresses me is that I am so limited in terms of time. I'm 68 years old. I've not been on the earth for a very long time. And my view of history is my 68 years. And it's really not all of my 68 years. I don't remember much until I was 10 or 12 years old. And then I wasn't paying very close attention until I was probably 20 years old. So I have 50 years. And that's, in the history of the world, that's not a very long time. A lot of things happen. And that's what I think the old woman was able to explain to the kids that were delivering eggs. They'd never seen these kinds of things. She had. So I try to maintain a perspective in terms of time, and I try to maintain a perspective in terms of place or location. I'm an American, and so my view of the world is what has happened in my little corner of it in America. And that impacts a lot of things. I think, well, there's not much persecution of Christians in the world today. That's because of where I live. I think that there are not pandemics. There are not these horrible deaths. But that's because of where I live. We have good water treatment. We have good sewage treatment. We know about vaccination. We know about protecting ourselves from the spread of disease because we understand bacteria and virus and many of those things. But God is not limited. God has seen these kinds of things before, and he understands it because God is not limited by time. My view of time is necessarily limited, but God lives above time. It's as if time has no meaning to God. First or Second Peter 3 at verse 8 is a quotation, largely, most scholars would say, of Psalms 90 and verse 4. And Peter is talking about something entirely different than these pandemics, because what Peter was talking about was people who were saying, well, God has been saying he was going to judge the world for a long time, and all things continue as they've been from the very beginning. And Peter says, you're just willingly ignorant. that there have been judgments in the past, and you're willingly ignorant of the fact that God doesn't operate on the same time schedule that I operate on. He said, let not this one fact escape your notice, beloved, that with the Lord, one day is like 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is like one day. So God isn't limited by time. He saw what happened in the year 151. I have no idea what happened in the year 151. But he knows that. I've talked to some people who lived through the polio pandemic. And polio, as bad as that disease was, doesn't rank up there with any of the 10 great pandemics that we talked about. I remember getting the polio vaccine. That's as far back as I remember. God saw it. God saw the whole thing. And these are some of the statements that I found about God and the way that he thinks about time. Neither the apostle nor the psalmist, we're talking about Peter's statement or Psalm's statement or David's statement in Psalms 90, meant that God does not perceive any difference between the duration of a day and that of 1,000 years, but that those differences do not affect either his designs or his actions. I thought this was important. In a word, with God, time passes neither slower nor swifter than is suitable to him and his economy. Nor can there be any reason why it should be necessary for him to either delay or hasten the end of all things. And then this last one. Man has but a short time to live, and if he does not accomplish his purposes in a very brief time, he never will. But it is not so with God. Now, that's not biblical information. That's just people that are thinking about what the biblical information means. And I think they say it very well. And then I know that God is not limited by place. God is ubiquitous. Or the word that we have used a lot to describe God is we say that he's omnipresent. They mean mostly the same thing. Psalms 33, verse 13. The Lord looks from heaven. He sees all the sons of men. From his dwelling place, he looks out over all the inhabitants of the earth. Psalms 139. David asks the question, where could I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend to heaven, you're there. If I make my bed in Sheol, behold, you're there. So and we're familiar with the story of Jonah. Jonah was told to go to Nineveh and preach. And Jonah didn't want to go, not because he thought he was going to be a failure, but I think Jonah didn't want to go because he was afraid he would be a success. And Jonah hated the Assyrians, and he didn't want them to be spared. So God tells Jonah, arise, go to the Nineveh, the great city, cry against it. Their wickedness has come up before me. Jonah rose up to flee to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. He wanted to run the other direction, so he got on a boat and started for Tarshish. So his purpose was to flee from the presence of the Lord, and we know how foolish that was. God is not limited by space, and God is not limited by time. So when we talk about things that have happened in the past, things that maybe we read a little bit about in the history books, but we never experienced those things. It's important to remember that for God, it's not something you read about in a history book. He was there. And it's important for me to remember that I am limited. And I don't know where. I was working on too many things at the same time. I have a notation there for Isaiah, the 35th chapter. I don't know what that was for. What that notation was supposed to be was 1 Corinthians, the 2nd chapter, beginning at verse 9. It is written, no eye has seen, nor ear has heard, nor heart has imagined what God has prepared for those who love him. God has revealed it to us by the Spirit. The Spirit searches all things, even the deep things of God. Who among men knows the thoughts of man except his own spirit within him? I'm limited. I know only what I know. So too, no one knows the things of God or the thoughts of God except the Spirit of God. And thank goodness God has revealed it to us. Romans, the 11th chapter. Oh, the depth of the riches, both of the wisdom and the knowledge of God. How unsearchable are his judgment and unfathomable his ways. Who has known the mind of the Lord? Who has become his counselor? Who has first given to him that it might be paid back to him again? For from him and through him and to him are all things. To him be the glory forever. Bertrand Russell said, if there were a God, now understand Bertrand Russell is an atheist. He said, if there were a God, I think it very unlikely that he would have such an uneasy vanity as to be afflicted by those who doubt his existence. Bertrand Russell questioned why, in his opinion, God made his existence and presence so obscure and so inadequate. But I think that's because he understands or misunderstands that God is not obscure and he is not inadequate. The truth is, humble people will seek God. The omnipresent God waits to be wanted. And another man wrote, you can see God from anywhere if your mind is set to love and obey him. So to think that because I've never seen the things that are happening before, or to think that there are things that are happening that have never happened before in all of human history, maybe to view ourselves in a way that gives us a little bit too much credit. So thoughts. Wow, you guys are so quiet tonight. What happened?
Well, I'm thinking about the famines they've had and different things too in different countries. The Irish famine they had, and millions of people died in some of those famines. So we've been just extremely blessed in this country.
True. The potato famine, I don't know what the death toll was from the Irish potato famine, but it was huge. That's why a lot of people came to this country.
Well, that's where, during the time of, what's it, Queen Well, you know, the short one. I've forgotten. But, you know, the little one. What's her face?
Victoria? Queen Victoria?
Victoria. Yeah, it's Victoria. And she helped the people in Ireland through that potato famine. But, I mean, you stop to think about all the things that happened. Kim, did you know that your grandfather got encephalitis from that Hong Kong flu and lost his hearing? I don't know if you remember that.
I didn't know when. I knew he had encephalitis, and that's how he lost his hearing, but I didn't know that it was from
Hong Kong. Yeah, it was from the Hong Kong flu. Okay. But then the rest of the family didn't get it. I don't know why.
Yeah.
In the 60s.
One thing I noticed, Dean, when you were talking about God and not limited by time, and how we're so limited by time is by virtue of the fact that we're human. Just, and I'm not picking on you, but just the language that you used, you said, God saw all of these. Well, that, just the way that we form our language is an indicator of time. I don't think that God probably sees it that way, that he saw it, you know? And so I think it's really important to keep it in perspective like that. And I think this is a good thing to think about, because I'm reading a lot of people talking about God taking judgment and this being a judgment on humanity, and this will bring us back to God. And hopefully it causes us to stop and think and reflect, like kind of like we're doing tonight. But I don't think that that's God doing that to cause that to happen. I mean, this has gone on in humanity from the time we were created. And I think that one of the people that you quoted, I can't remember, but it's kind of like, why would God be so concerned about that? About our daily, not that he's not concerned about our daily lives. I'm not expressing that very well, but anyway, just that whole concept about time and place. And I think that's something very important for us to consider.
Well, I think too, you stop and think about people, they can use the other term and say, why is God doing this and punishing us? You know, some say, yeah, maybe he's using us, bringing us back, and others are thinking, why is he punishing? Why is he letting this happen? Well, you've got Franklin Graham that's saying that same thing about that he's punishing people.
True.
I think a lot of this stuff is self-promoted by people. Poor hygiene, you know, they threw garbage and things like that into the streets, out their windows every day. The rats came in by the millions. Of course, the fleas were there. I understand that's... why there were so many June weddings was because in May it was warm enough to take your early bath, and your once a year bath, it was warm enough, and you didn't stink too bad in June. So that's why they had a lot of weddings in June.
That's interesting.
You know, there's a lot of positive news if a person looks for it. The positive is I saw that in the Spanish flu, that in Chicago they decided they were going to celebrate that they were over the hump, and 200,000 people went out and had a parade, and within 3 days their hospitals were all full. Well, we know at this time that we're not going to have 200,000 people, even if they do open up the beaches, that are all going to go out and they're going to celebrate. And those people who that are needing to stay away are going to take precautions and are going to stay away. And just today I heard that ultraviolet light may be a new way to fight the virus, that it kills it very quickly. And if you could have an ultraviolet light thing that you walk through before you went to work or before you went into the grocery store, you'd basically keep from contaminating people in the public places. But it's a little too soon to know all of that. But I mean, there seems to be good news out there, but it's still nebulous and you can't prove anything on some of the stuff. And I think when you're anxious about that, you need to look for the good news and not just listen to the negative over and over and over again.
There's an argument for the existence of God that has been made a law that is based on history, that man has never managed to annihilate himself. No matter the things that we have done, if you really look at it, God has been involved in preserving mankind. Not necessarily with miracles, but God has been involved in preserving mankind.
Did he ever come back?
I was trying to flesh that argument out, and that's one of the things that I wanted to include in this discussion, but I just don't quite have a handle on that. So I didn't include it, but I invite you to think about that. So it's not the fact that the virus coronavirus is existing and it's causing such grief is not an argument that there is no God. It may be an argument that in fact there is a God. Any other thoughts from anyone?
Well, thank you for all your information and your research.